comments made on Serospectives are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Hello and welcome to Serospectives, This Month in Technology for May 2013. I'm Lisa Salinger, and without delay, I'd like to pass this along to my co-host, Steve Sauzin, now from the great state of Minnesota, who will take it from here.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thanks for joining us wherever you may happen to be in the world. I hope if you're joining us live that you'll participate in the text chat, and if you're not, then you may want to consider doing so. It's a lot of fun, and a lot of interaction goes on sort of behind the scenes, so check it out. It's fully accessible, it's fully fun, and it's just fully awesome. As always, we're joined by a couple of distinguished folks here this evening. First up is Liam Irvin, who is best known for the computer games he produces for blind users. Games are released via his company, Elworks, and we'll have that site coming to you shortly. His latest endeavor, Audio Archery, is now free for Android and iOS, and we're going to talk about Audio Archery later on in the program. Liam, thanks for joining us. Did we lose
him? Help?
Oh, there he is. There's Liam.
Sorry. I had muted my microphone so you guys didn't hear me breathing.
I know we put people to sleep, but you almost set a record for the first 40 seconds of the show. I was kind of impressed there for a minute, but anyway, thanks for coming back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We are also joined by Kara Quinn, who embraces a wide variety of artistic and technical interests. She enjoys a successful modeling career, which allows her to express herself in print and promotion venues. She teaches guitar, she performs and composes in a variety of genres, enjoys producing all sorts of music, and is on a number of podcasts that you may have listened to.
And I hassle Steve.
She also... What's that?
And I hassle Steve. I hassle you, Steve.
You do hassle Steve. We used to have a whole podcast segment around that. I have to say I miss those days. Anyway, you also manage two very busy mailing lists, VI Phones and Mac Visionaries, which, of course, Mac people are likely familiar with. And as if you didn't have enough to do, you also develop software for Looktel and...
Draconis
Entertainment. So very busy, but glad you were able to take some time out to spend it with us. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me. I mean, it was a little last minute, but I'm very glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's go ahead and dive right into this month in tech, or last month in tech as the case may be. First, Windows 8.1 gets its first initial outing, and the big news is that the start button is back. Is everyone really excited about this?
As a Mac user? I'm sorry, Liam. Go for it.
No, I was going to say, I'm probably the one person that never missed the start button.
Well, I never missed the start button either because I don't use Windows anymore.
I think you are.
Oh.
I did miss it. And to the point that I did something I said I would never do, classic shell on my Windows 8 computer because I was so used to pressing the start menu key and typing in the first few letters of the program I wanted to open. And I felt like without that start button, or without the start menu, I was back in the land of XP. Now, who knows how much of an actual start menu we'll get, but at least with the start button, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's not an uncommon view. I mean, just because I use Mac doesn't mean that I'm not familiar with the discussions going on. A lot of people, you know, agree and really miss that. So I think it's going to be a welcome change for a lot of people in the blind and VI community.
I just think it's teasing. Microsoft is like, okay, let's take this away. Nope, we're not going to have it. We're not going to have it. Got to get used to life without it now. We're not going to have it. And, oh, we're just kidding. Here it is. It's back.
Yeah, picture a cookie on a string.
A cookie on a string. That right there would be
like
a great
idea. Like they're dangling it, and then they... I was thinking that, too.
I'm kind of hungry now.
They're dangling it, and then they snatch it back up to heaven, and There it is again.
Well, you know.
So if you are listening and have any great warm chocolate chip cookie recipes,
now would be the time.
Feel free to let us know.
I mean,
soon you'll be
and
able
chances
to.
Are the button will just probably pop up the tiles that we had before. It'll just be a button that sticks out. I don't expect a new start menu.
Well, if you are waiting with eager anticipation, they have announced that the public preview will be in late June. So you won't have much longer to wait, I guess, just till late June. And then you can tell us all about the start button and what it reveals or doesn't reveal. I think it's kind of sad if that's the big change, if that's the big enhancement to it. I know there's going to be other stuff, but the fact that this is being called out, you know, it's not faster, better, more CPU, whatever. It has a start button, and I think it's amazing that that's kind of the thing people are really jazzed about.
That was kind of my thought too, Steve, actually reading that,
you know,
because it's like, hello, we made a really bad UX decision, and now we're going to go back and change it. You know, we're going to fix it. I mean, at least they are kind of listening to what people want, but yeah, if that's the big thing, I looked at that, I'm like, okay. So that's kind of, I agree with you.
Meanwhile, screen readers see websites differently than sighted people do. Why links should have real text? This is an interesting discussion that in my professional life, I get to deal with quite a bit. We have an article coming to you in just a few moments, but indeed, screen readers do see websites differently. There's a number of reasons for that, but it's a phenomenon that's not well understood, I think. People just sort of assume that a screen reader will see the website the same way a sighted user will see that website, and that's not the case. And it's sort of an interesting shock when people realize just how different it is and why having links with text, especially text that's descriptive, not, you know, click here, more, you know, things like that, can be important. What do people think about descriptive links, or I guess links in general, as they're being used on websites today?
This has been going on for quite some time. I mean, this identical discussion has been going on for 13 years that I know of. The idea of click here or here, you know, as the text for a link, has been a huge issue for a long, long time. It's actually amazing. I look at sites as I visit them, and it's amazing to me how many links still use that. You know, click here, or just here, or, you know, some other label that's really not descriptive.
The other thing that drives me nuts is when everything is clickable. Like, I'm thinking about, like, Wikipedia, where almost every other word seems to be a link.
Yeah, definitely. It's a bit, you know, it can break the flow for a screen reader. One of the things that the article actually didn't touch on, which I was surprised, is the advent of the touchscreen and the way that changes the way people browse. I think that can help the context, at least for some of this in terms of links. But it's definitely, like I said, a discussion that surprises me that it's even still going on.
What would be great is to have a resource that one could give to developers. So if you are having difficulty reading a website, that you could maybe explain or give developers something to point to that would demonstrate how screen readers interpret pages. And there are a number of resources out there. We don't have them, I think, here to link, but if you do a Google search, you can find plenty, including some plugins that will help a developer understand exactly how a screen reader is going to interpret the page. It'll essentially show you what the screen reader would say on the page and in what order things will be read. And oftentimes just looking at that flow is enough to sort of wake a developer up and explain to them, sort of, you know, help them understand what the issues are. So, yes, indeed, screen reader do interpret pages very different than everyone else. And apropos screen readers, NVDA 2013.1 has been released with improved laptop keyboard and with PowerPoint support and some Braille support. So this is very exciting. NVDA, for those who don't know, is the open source screen reader, which has been around for quite some time, but which is getting a lot of focus. Definitely an increase in usage worldwide. A lot of language support is present, and of course, it being open source, NVDA is something that's constantly being built out and improved, and has really sort of charted the way in many respects, and doing it at the cost of zero. So exciting stuff. Glad to see enhancements on the NVDA front. Anyone? I know, Kara, you're not using Windows, as you mentioned earlier, but Liam, do you use NVDA? What are your thoughts on NVDA and this new 2013.1, if you've used it?
You know, I am using it a lot. I use it a ton.
And you think it works? It works well? I mean, for people that are thinking...
I got to put it this way. The main screen reader that I used to use that I paid for, that I paid about $1,000 for, it's not installed on my system anymore. It's on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, and that's something I hear
I've
a lot of.
I started playing with it.
I actually, and I'm really resistant to change, and I actually went and did it.
Have you looked back? Do you think,
I've started
playing
with it more.
I hadn't done this, or I wish I had waited longer, or any feelings like that?
No, I mean, I'm okay with it. There's a few things that I just have to get used to, but it's kind of like any system, you know, you just find things that you just have to adjust to.
I've started playing with it more, and I would by no means say I'm a power user, but really the days of this screen reader is better than that screen reader, and, you know, those two put together aren't as good as that one, they're really over, because you can have so many different word processing programs or browsers, and so the one screen reader to rule them all philosophy is kind of gone, and so I think it's important to have as many tools as we can. I was also looking at add-ons the other day, and I found that interesting just to see what people considered important. There were some where I could see, well, yeah, I can see the need for that. And there were other ones where I looked at the description and I thought, wow, I wonder how much time somebody took to write that and why. But it's great because just like there's not one screen, you know, to rule them all. There's not one user with one particular set of needs. And so I'm personally very gratified to see all the choices we have.
So these add-ons, I think that's a really powerful component of NVDA, and one that's not, or maybe not as well realized as it should be. These add-ons are just like it sounds. It's something you can download and add onto the screen reader that adds some functionality, maybe makes it work better with a certain program, like PowerPoint, which we mentioned, or some other application, and these add-ons are easy to download and easy to install. Someone has to create them, but basically if you use a piece of software and you've customized an add-on to work with NVDA, you can share it so that if someone else uses that same piece of software, they can benefit from your work. And so you do kind of get these add-ons that are somewhat obscure, but they're something that is meaningful to someone or other out there, and they've made it, and who knows, maybe it is beneficial to someone else and they too can benefit by it. And I find that absolutely fascinating, just the versatility that one can achieve through the add-ons.
Not only do you have add-ons that, you know, work with applications, you actually have add-ons that add features. The two that I can think of are the Translate and the OCR, that, you know, add features that the screen reader didn't necessarily come with.
Absolutely fascinating. Yes, that's true. You can increase all the features and everything with the through the add-on. So it's very, very powerful, and it's really, I think it's fair to say, it's evolved to a point where I think initially, just like with many open source type projects, you had to sort of be a techie to get into NVDA and use it and understand it and understand sort of some of the shortcomings and whatever, but it's not there anymore. It's evolved to a point where, Liam, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, you almost can replace the traditional screen readers with it and do just fine. You don't have to understand how technically things work and whatever. There's enough documentation and a big enough community that almost anyone can really dive in and get stuff done.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are doing that now. I mean, not just me. A lot of others have cut the cord, as it were, and, you know, went with the free solution.
That should totally be their slogan. NVDA, cutting the cord.
Cutting the cord.
Well, I think the days of, hopefully the days of exorbitantly priced screen readers are a thing of the past, at least, you know, to some degree and quickly. You know, I think that it's just important to have access as widely as possible. the largest segment of people.
And so many people can use computers now that couldn't, because the screen reading technology was just not affordable. I mean, it's a lot of money in many cases, and that precludes a lot of people from being able to use technology that is often, you know, less than half the cost of the screen reader is. And I think this, you know, really opens up a lot of avenues for people, and of course, lots of choices now too. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, choice is good.
One area that's not so exciting, though, or which is a bit unfortunate, is that the CAPTCHAs. CAPTCHAs are these annoying things that try to determine whether or not someone is a human or not. For example, these are often depicted as squiggly characters that you have to type into a box in order to create a new account or to fill out a form. And the idea is that by making these things hard to read, it forces someone to verify that they're a human. Only a human can read these, theoretically anyway. Scanning packages and so forth can't understand what these characters are, and so if you're able to successfully type the numbers into these boxes or whatever the CAPTCHA may be, then you are indeed a human. And the idea is to prevent automated bots from creating new accounts and filling out forms and petitions or whatever the case may be, so that only humans can do this. And the White House uses such a CAPTCHA, and there is an audio component that is nearly impossible to understand. And the irony here is that the White House had a We the People petition to help the blind. It is ironically not possible to sign it as a blind person if you need to create an account to solve the CAPTCHA, that you need initially to get your account created to sign this petition, which is to help the blind. You need sighted assistance to solve it, or you need to be pretty savvy and have some other method for solving CAPTCHAs. And so, sort of irony there, I actually ran into this myself on the Mac, because I didn't have an automated way, at least at the time, to solve CAPTCHAs. I've since found one, and it was this that encouraged me to do it, because I wanted to sign this petition and I didn't have anyone sighted handy, and I couldn't create my account to do this. So that sort of motivated me to do some research and find out what CAPTCHA solving solutions might exist for Mac. But the idea here is that here you have a government institution using this inaccessible CAPTCHA, and it shows up ironically on this petition that is aimed to helping the blind. This got a really neat write-up, actually, in quite a few different places, but the Huffington Post is one of them, and we have that article coming to you. Who else, like me, is a huge fan of CAPTCHAs?
Hooray!
Hey, I love them. I can't get enough of them. Hey, I did hear the CAPTCHA that you're talking about, and it is pretty abysmal. I was able to get through it, but I got to tell you, you know, once you get through the CAPTCHA, not only is the CAPTCHA bad, it's really one of the worst I've heard. The site is also quite cluttered. It could be done a lot better, in my opinion, at least. But yeah, the CAPTCHA there is particularly bad. I'd say I've only heard one worse, and that's it is really ironic. And again, like the screen reader revolution, I think we need a CAPTCHA revolution as well.
It takes an awful lot to get me going and really wound up about something. But this was one of those times. I mean, it was Charlie Brown's teacher with a mouthful of marbles, and you heard this wah, 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 and then a pause, and then you heard wah, 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 and it's, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, okay, first of all, are these letters or numbers? It was that bad. Heaven help you if your hearing is impaired, because there was no way. And I think I tried two or three CAPTCHAs before I understood it. And there's not any kind of uniformity in these things, because some of them are actually okay. And then other ones will have groups, let's say groups of numbers, and you only have to get one of the numbers. And so, you know, you can kind of pick one out of three and have a fighting chance of sort of understanding one out of three. But with this particular one, I think it was like a group of three, a group of four, and a group of four. And it was just really impossible. And the thing that was sad to me is they could say that their website was ADA compliant because they had an audio CAPTCHA alternative. But wow, what an alternative. I wonder if any of the people who implemented it ever tried to solve it. I kind of think that would be a resounding no.
Yeah.
I did my taxes the other week. Well, not the other week, because we're way past, you know, past tax time, but Tax Act has a really nice one. It's just really plain. And I just was able to do it in the first try, and it was done. And I was like, hooray. And I wish more companies would, you know, see this and do this.
Yeah, it's, unfortunately, I think, I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think it's actually going to get worse before it gets better. And I say that because with machine recognition, in terms of visual recognition and audio recognition, that technology is exploding right now. And because the technology is exploding right now, CAPTCHAs, unless people change the paradigm that they're actually using for CAPTCHA on a really widespread basis, they're going to get really, really bad, I think, to try to, you know, it's already pretty bad to try to defeat the recognition algorithms. And I think, obviously, as the algorithms get better, the CAPTCHAs are, people believe, at least, that the CAPTCHAs are going to need to get more difficult. And it just needs to, you know, the paradigm needs to change. You know, obviously, there are better ways to do this. And instead of making harder CAPTCHAs, we need to switch the paradigm.
I used to have late-night chats with Bernard Maldonado, who ran Salona, a CAPTCHA solving service way back when. And Bernard really opened my eyes to a lot of this stuff. And one of the things he was telling me about, and this was a couple of years ago, was that there were a couple of companies experimenting with these game type CAPTCHAs where you had to drag pieces, like puzzle pieces, into a certain configuration, or you had to cleat a color pattern. Or there was one that involved this helicopter, and you had to land it. Just this weird sort of craziness that involved a lot of dragging and dropping with the mouse. And, of course, Bernard was real into researching all of these CAPTCHAs, but the problem was he was getting these requests through his automated, or, you know, his manual CAPTCHA-solving service from people that were trying to solve these, and there was no way for his operators to explain to them how to do it because it involved dragging and dropping. And in that instance, it's not only inaccessible to the blind, but to people who, because of motor impairments or whatever else, aren't able to use a mouse and can't drag and drop that object or those objects into place. So
can we have Super Egg Hunt CAPTCHAs?
You could work on that. You could be the CAPTCHA king.
Yeah, but what if you enjoy those, but you're just challenged? You know, I don't have the whatever it takes to get past the CAPTCHA, and then I can't blame it on something like lack of sight. It's just, I don't know, lack of smarts, lack of something.
Or the CAPTCHA's
lack
fun.
Of, lack you, of lots of yeah, free time.
Yeah, you just going to solve exactly. The CAPTCHA.
I remember being on a website, and the CAPTCHA was a question, and it was, what is 3 plus 5? And I wrote in the number 8, and I sat there in astonishment thinking, is that really all there was? That was easy. That's how it should be, I think.
I had that same CAPTCHA, and I wrote in the number 7. I probably shouldn't have that, but
there's one in every crowd.
You know, right there, it should have flagged me as, obviously, this is not a machine. It's stupid to be a computer.
But well, can we have stuff like Who's Buried in Grant's Tomb?
Well, there's they actually do have some of those. Some message boards. I mean, they'll take a topic that would be relevant to that message board and ask a question based on that. And then they might also include, you know, what is 4 plus 4 or what is, you know, that sort of thing. So I've definitely seen.
That's a good idea.
I mean, there's a virtual guitar forum, and they'll ask a question about one of the components that one might use for the particular virtual guitar, and you would write it in, and then they would also have a math question, and it works great. I mean, there's no mess, there's no difficulty.
Yeah, bureaucrats got a hold of these because they got complicated far beyond the point that they needed to be, I think.
Well, while you're depressed over CAPTCHA, Google I.O. has recently concluded...
Speaking of things getting complicated far more than they need to be, that was a transition we sort of fell into.
The Google I.O. conference, which is the big developer Google conference where everyone gets to go and hear some normally really awesome keynotes and speeches and stuff that Google's involved with. And the thing that's always really made me jealous about Google I.O. is the people that get to go there tend to get gadgets. Google gives out lots of, you know, really cool gadgets. Everyone got a Nexus one
toys
year.
To play with.
Yeah. And then I work in an organization that sends people to Google I.O., so they always come back and are like, oh, look what I have. And I'm like, can I borrow that? And they're like, well, maybe not.
Chrome Pixel, I think, was this year.
Yes, yes. The Chrome Pixel was the thing that got passed around and, you know, got taken out of my hands as I was getting ready to run for the door. Anyway, lots of fun, exciting things this year. That just disappeared off my screen. That's how exciting they are. Let's see.
They just jumped away.
Google Photos.
Google Play Games Google is Play, the first one. Yeah. Google Play Music, which has music streaming and makes search and discovery simple. I thought it was already simple, but Google has made it even Google simple. Google is releasing a version of the Samsung Galaxy S4, which will be offered through the Google Play Store, which will be coming with the stock Android. Google Hangout app. They've turned the Google Hangout feature, which I still have yet to use, and I keep hearing is and is not accessible, and I don't know which way it goes, but there's an app.
I use it all
now.
The time, actually.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'm really big into the Google stuff.
I'll have to talk to you sometime about that, because I want to be big into it, but every time I get confused easily, apparently. But then again,
you mentioned Google Play Music, and I have to like bite my tongue to keep from going out off on the how much I love Google Play Music.
Yeah, I saw your tweet earlier
I'm like
about that.
Chomping at the bit here.
So it is really neat. Then is it true? Have they really simplified music?
As I put it to a friend of mine the other day, I said if it were legal, I would put a ring on it.
Wow, there's a dare I say a ringing endorsement.
You have. Was it like, I think if you subscribe within a certain amount of time, it's what, $7.99 a month, and you can listen to whatever you want. It's not like a Pandora-like system. You just be like, I want to hear this album, and just go and play the whole album. There's no ads. There's no commercials. It's all in high quality. They've done a pretty good job with keyboard shortcuts. They need to do a little better. But again, you know, it just came out, so you have to give them time. If you're on Android, the Google Play app is really good. Kind of funny story, when they first released it, some of the buttons would say to do accessibility. So it just showed that they hadn't put it in there
at least
yet,
they were
but they
thinking
were going
about
to.
It.
And then they released an update last week, and it's fantastic. I guess there is one coming for iOS, supposedly.
So it's kind of like Rhapsody or Spotify in that you can hear
it
what
is.
You want.
You know, it really is. And you can make stations, and it'll do like a Pandora-like thing where it'll try and pick what you want to hear. And I use it all the time. Don't tell them, but I use it at work. Whoops.
Well, not that I would use it at work, but if I did, what browser have you had the most luck with?
Believe it or not, Chrome with NVDA is working really good.
Ah, notice we have NVDA right back again. Very cool. I would never try that at work, but if I did, that's definitely what I'll do tomorrow. At some point. Google Photos is the other big deal that they announced, and basically it's not just a photo streaming type service. There's all sorts of photo editing and enhancement tools. They're all cloud-based, so it basically makes it possible to do all kinds of manipulation with photos. And
sounds
also
like an Instagram.
What's that?
Sounds kind of like Instagram. I don't know much about it, so... This is the first time I'm hearing about it.
Well, it looks like it does
really
more than Instagram, because it'll
yeah.
make like time-lapse panoramas. I don't no idea what that is, but it's exciting to some people out there.
It's supposed to be able to recognize family members, whether they're smiling or not, and that sort of thing. which I find really, really pretty cool.
That's amazing. So yeah, all kinds of features in the Google Photos feature. And
so if my nieces use something like that, would they see, here's a picture of Aunt Lisa. She has that same grouchy look on her face.
Well, I mean, in the story, they say they'll try to choose, if you want it to, it'll choose pictures for you based on who you've photographed and what kind of quality of image it is, but also whether they're smiling, what kind of facial expressions they have. So it's really, I mean, you know, if it does what they say it does, it's quite something. And, you know, like we said before, I mean, the whole visual processing algorithms are just skyrocketing right now. I'm pretty excited about that. I'd like to see where that goes, because that really opens up some really good possibilities, you know, for uses for the blind and visually impaired also.
And the next article we have is probably one of the coolest or creepiest things that Google has ever done. Admittedly, though, I'm going to err on the side of cool with this, although creepy is really close. The article discusses how Google's virtual assistant is invading on Siri's territory. Basically, Apple has incorporated Google's assistant feature into the Google search application on iOS. It's been on Android for ages, but now it's on iOS as well, or at least it can be if you download the Google search app. And among the features is Google's Google Now thing, which we'll talk about, and also the actual assistant, where you can ask Google questions just like you can Siri. And although it doesn't necessarily tell knock-knock jokes or give sort of the funny responses that Siri often gives, it does give very accurate and meaningful and useful responses. You can ask it all kinds of questions, anything from, you know, what is the weather tomorrow in Antarctica, which I'm sure everyone wants to know, to, you know, hey, where can I find a pizza, you know, which is super helpful. And it will return all kinds of results for you, leveraging, of course, Google. Very, very neat enhancement that they've incorporated into the iOS app. It is pretty accessible. There are a few issues, but not major. It, for the most part, works really well. And then there's the creepy cool thing, which is the Google Now. And basically, the way I would summarize Google Now is it monitors what you do with other Google services, and then it tries to present to you information that it thinks you need. So, for example, it knows where you are. It might tell you your local weather report. It might tell you the traffic report, because maybe it observes that every morning you take a certain route to work. So then before that route, it will give you the traffic report for the highways you travel. For me, it knows what bus route I take, because I always take the same one. And so as I'm walking to the bus stop, it can give me about how delayed my bus is going to be, because it knows I'm going to do that. It also can monitor, for example, Gmail. If you have that all integrated and are using it, it might monitor that and see that you've purchased airline tickets to fly somewhere or other. And so it will, as the flight time approaches, show you your airline information. Or it might see that you've purchased tickets to a sporting event, in which case it might show you information about that. So it tells you if you have upcoming appointments on Google Calendar. It might give you information about the event or the location of the event, because it knows where the event is happening based on whatever is specified. So it basically analyzes you and what you're doing and the data that you have in other Google services, and it can give you pretty poignant and timely information, which on the one hand is creepy in that it's sort of an auto-stalker, and on the other hand, it's pretty darn useful, not going to lie, to be able to know...
It shocks me.
You know, how late your bus really is before you even get to the bus stop. So it's neat. It is available in iOS. It's part of the Google Search app. Again, they're bundling everything with the Google Search app, so don't look for Google Now. It's not there. Google Search, and of course on Android, it's its own... its own app. And so Liam, you've used this and you like it, or
I just got a Nexus a couple of weeks ago. So I'm really dealing with it as it is on Android, and it is scary. I mean, it both amazes and frightens me. I was going to work and it goes to me, it goes, "Oh, I see you're traveling. Are you going to work?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And it goes, do you work at such and such address? And what scared me was it was 10 digits, like 10 numbers off of the actual work address. And I was just like, how do you know this? I'm on the train. Where are you getting this from?
It knows.
It's crazy. But like, I was over at my mom's the other day doing some work over there, and I had been there for like 3 hours, and it was like, I see you're in a new place. Do you want me to remember this place? I'm like, no, we're good, but thank you.
Can you get it to trash talk Siri?
No, not yet. That would be nice, though. Although I will say, as far as like responses go, Siri still trumps it. I asked Siri today to get me directions from one train station to another. I just said, what's the directions for, you know, the Rosemont train station to Clybourne? And it was like, here you go. I was just like, wow. Google now is a Google search and all that is a little limited with what results it'll give you. You can't really word things in plain English like you would. I've been really messing with it. If you have Chrome, Chrome now has the feature. If you go to google.com, there's a search by voice button, and you can do the audio searches like you would do on the tablet or on iOS using the app, and you can ask it questions and it will give you verbal responses.
Nice. I don't think Google Now is quite as advanced on iOS. It's like I say, it's part of the search app, and it's getting
they
there.
Kinda, it shows I think they info. Held some parts back.
Yeah, it's not quite to the same scary level.
Like you mentioned the Gmail thing. I had bought a playpen for the guinea pigs, and it popped up the tracking info for me. And if you turn on, I'm going to do this, but I did. If you turn on the save your Google history, I guess it'll use search queries to try and give you information as well. I haven't really seen it do this yet, nor do I want to, but supposedly it's supposed to.
So here's my question. All of us have gotten spam from time to time, and does it sense that you've received a number of spam about a certain issue, maybe, and then start suggesting remedies for you or anything like that? I mean, this could be kind of scary.
Steve, I wouldn't know the answer to that. I couldn't tell you that.
Touche.
The only spam spam Liam gets is about chicken nuggets.
Yeah, right.
Trying to put us back on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, there you go. It's a
actually
family
that
show.
That was a very funny moment I remember from when Liam joined us last time. He had come in and his audio and everything checked out. He was ready to go, and he said, "Do I have some time?" And we said, "Yeah, a little bit before we're ready to start." And he said, "I just got home, and I just want to nuke some supper." And I should add that this was right before Super Egg Hunt was released. And somebody
That's
said,
right.
"What are you having for supper?" And he didn't miss a beat, and he said, "Chicken nuggets." And so that's where my comment came from about Liam getting spam about
nice
chicken nuggets. So.
Well, Google Now is definitely fascinating. But again, you know, like you mentioned the tracking information, I think that's handy. I mean, how often have I needed
amazing.
To look up tracking information and I don't remember where I put it and whatever? It would just pop up and tell me when it's going to arrive, like the day of or whatever. That would be super handy. I don't know how I feel about it reading through my email, but geez, when it does things like that, that's just neat. So anyway, check it out. All of these things I should comment in case anyone out there is as paranoid as I am. You optionally have to enable them. Just by getting the Google search app doesn't necessarily allow
Google
to
now will,
investigate your life.
It will take great pains to tell you, hey, I'm Google now. Do you want me to do this? Are you sure? And I mean, it'll ask you. It's not just going to start doing it. So you don't have to worry about that.
On a more fun note, we have this game called Audio Archery, which is out for iOS. And for those people who are using Google Now, if it hasn't already told you, it's out on Android as well. So there's a new podcast out about it, but we have someone here that might be able to give us a little bit of info about the game and how it works and what the premise of it is and where you find it.
Well, perfect. We can turn it over to Kara.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Thanks. I'll tell you all about this game and go for it, Liam.
It's really exciting. I have been wanting for the longest time to make iOS games and games for multi-platform, you know, for mobile systems. And I finally released audio archery, and it's a very simple game, but you shoot arrows at a target using your touch screen, and as Steve said, it is available for both iOS and Android, so you can search for it in your particular marketplaces in the App Store for iOS, Google Play for Android. They're available. It's available in both, and it was fun. I had a lot of fun making it. It's really rewarding to see people play it and to get emails going, this is fantastic, this is awesome, we want more games, we want Super Egg Hunt. Give us Super Egg Hunt.
And so, yeah, when are we getting that?
Yeah. When chickens fly, huh?
People have been super lame.
I must my...
Yeah. Now, that's going to be a little difficult, but I will tell you, I mean, I will say right now, yeah, Super Egg Hunt is coming. I don't know when, but it will be. It has to. My next project, I really would like to try and do something that kind of gets you up and moving, and I'd like to create some sort of motion-based sports game. And I'm working on one I want to do, but I'd love to do that.
Oh, very cool.
It's a great idea. There's a need there. I really just feel it's necessary to put in my 2 cents and add that simple does not necessarily mean the same thing as easy. I've been on a mission, and that has been to beat the game before this podcast. And so far, I have failed.
Right there with you.
This is... yeah. This is a great game for a bunch of reasons, though. Because it is for mobile devices, it's really nicely and easily suited to being able to play it when you're out and about. For example, I was in a doctor waiting room, and I was playing Papa Sangre. And I got eaten by the hogs, didn't hear my name called, and someone tapped me on the shoulder. And let's talk about an action game, because I just about broke the high jump record. You know,
I'm not surprised,
but this is great because yeah, it took everything I had not to let out a scream worthy of Psycho. But this is great because I can hear the audio, but there's not so many layers of the audio that it drowns out your surroundings. And it's a relatively short game, depending on how well you do. So you can play it. I haven't timed it, but it's like 5-ish, 7-ish minutes. So it's great for a commute or, killing a little bit of time.
Yeah, I'd say 5 to 7 minutes, probably.
Yeah, I think that's part of what's been so popular about it. Did you find that you and... as someone who's done development, I guess I would put out to Kara and Liam, and that is, do you find that there are any particular challenges when developing apps for the mobile platform that you don't encounter when you are developing programs for the computer?
I have some thoughts, but Liam, why don't you go first?
Okay. Well, for me, the hardest challenge is, because I don't have a keyboard full of keys that I can tell you to press, I have to come up with, okay, how can I, make this into a gesture that you can use? For audio archery, it's really easy. You flick down and hold, and then you let go. But I have a game for Windows called Slide, which is a slide puzzle, and I would love to bring that to iOS, but I've been trying to come up with, okay, how am I going to, do the actions of moving around the board and moving pieces? So, because if you drag your finger around, you're going to move around the board. Well, now how do I, so it's a little harder. I mean, that's probably the hardest thing for me. Also, dealing with a device's hardware constraints. For example, that Windows machine you have is probably a quad core 2.2 gigahertz, and maybe that's, Swahili, but essentially it means stuff runs really fast. And on an iPhone, we don't really have that kind of power, so we have to kind of maximize what we have and maybe do a lot more behind the scenes cleanup and extra things that we may not have to do on an operating system like Windows or Mac.
I was actually going to say as well about the keyboard, the idea that since you don't have the keyboard, that you need to kind of if you're adapting the paradigm of a, you know, PC or Mac game to a mobile device, you don't have the flexibility of using a keyboard. But having said that, it also opens up some new ways of working with the user. You know, in other words, how can I, you know, what could they do that could allow this action to happen in a particular game or a particular app? And is it going to be understandable to them? You know, is it going to make sense if I have them do a flick right to do such and such? Or, you know, do they need to use one finger or two fingers? Is that going to, are they going to understand that? Is it going to make sense in context of the app? Like Liam did a really good job with just using the simple gesture of, you know, swiping your finger down and holding it and then releasing it. It's perfectly intuitive. And I mean, that in itself can be, depending on what you want to do in your game, you know, it can be either a challenge or a good creative experience to try to come up with a set of gestures that will work, you know, using the touchscreen, or how many of the phones or devices, sensors that you want to use. You know, could the user benefit from shaking the device, or could they, you know, would it be better for them to tilt the device? Would that make more sense in a particular context? The game, Where's My Rubber Ducky? One really cool thing with that is it uses, I don't know if he uses the compass or the gyro or both, but you can actually turn your body, your avatar, you know, in the game, which I particularly love. So, you know, it makes sense in context of the game, because you've got these zombies, you know, coming at you from different directions. And when you're holding the phone, you actually turn your body to face them. So just using, you know, you don't have to do a gesture. You can actually just hold the phone and turn yourself, which I really, really love that, that idea. And it just, it's a very creative way of dealing with that situation. So, you know, it can open up a lot of possibilities, the different sensors that are on devices now. And I'm sure that we'll see just more of that in various ways.
Just to back up a little bit, one question I would want to throw out there is a question that's often thrown at me, and that is, you know, from kids or younger folks who, you know, like technology and want to get into it and are curious, you know, what challenges they might face as someone with a vision impairment or total blindness, and how to develop. And, you know, geez, I'd love to do that, but I can't see. And both of you have vision impairments, and both of you have successfully developed and gotten apps into the App Store. What advice might you give kids or someone who might be listening that might be thinking, geez, you know, I would love to be an app developer someday?
Oh, I just talked, Liam. You want to go?
Have a full bottle of aspirin at all times. No, actually.
Get an espresso maker.
Yeah, that and coffee. I mean, it's a little different for me because I'm not doing things natively like Kara is doing. I'm kind of cheating. And so for me, it's different. But I mean, I can't speak for the people that do native apps because I just never had the patience to learn Objective-C, and that's my fault. But I kind of liken it to, and this analogy may go horribly wrong, but I'm self-taught, so I liken it to the difference of somebody that picked up a piano, well, not picked up the
that's
whole
impressive.
Piano, I'd like to see that, but, you know, that picks up, you know, an instrument and learns it by ear versus somebody that goes to school and learns theory. You know, I understand a lot of the concepts, but I don't necessarily know all the theory, and so that kind of holds me back at some points. But I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, when you possible, try and you know, work with other people and talk to people that have done it, and you know, a lot of times you'll find ways of getting these things done. I mean, like I said, I pretty much taught myself. I took like a year of programming in high school, but other than that, I've just had to kind of teach myself and learn from my mistakes. And one thing, and I always hear this, I need to dispel this, you don't have to know math to learn to program. Does it help? Yeah, probably, if you're calculating angles and doing geometrics, but you don't need to know math to know how to program. I'm horrible at math.
So I'll chime in too and just say, if you want to get into programming, now is an excellent time. And I'll just speak for the iOS side of things. Apple has made it super, super, super easy to really get started. And there are a plethora of tutorials that people have written that will really get you started right from the beginning of the basics of Xcode, which is the app that you need to run on your Mac, which basically is a very glorified editor that you type things into. It allows you to run apps on your phone. And if you're visually impaired, you'll need to, you know, to run them on your physical phone so that you can work with them. But Apple has a lot of free resources. It's the developer site, which is developer.apple.com. They have a plethora of free resources from very beginning tutorials. But for myself, Google is your friend. When you really want to get started in coding, if you're going to work with iOS or the Mac for that matter, just do some Google searches. Look for type in beginner tutorial, iOS programming or Objective-C. And incidentally, you don't need to use Objective-C on, you know, for iPhone coding. Xcode will put enough of it in for you. You can use other languages, but Objective-C is definitely the native language that the iPhone uses, that and C++. So learning C language is really good to get started. But again, the tutorials will really start you on that. It's possible to take a tutorial, learn how to use Xcode step by step. It'll take you through. It'll give you enough Objective-C that rather than learning it, you can just get used to just typing it in, understanding, what's happening with the step-by-step tutorials. And you can really get up and running pretty darn quickly. You can write a very simple Hello World app, which would be an app that just prints to the screen Hello World, which is a classic first app that people would write. And then you would be surprised at how quickly you get to an app that would play a sound or an app that would even display a web page. It's very, very easy to do in iOS. So if someone wants to get started, there are even YouTube videos where people that are very young are showing how to develop software. So you really don't have to have schooling behind you at this point. It's a great time to get involved. Search on Google and search the Apple developer site. And again, if you know someone who is doing it at all, ask them, if they have time, I'm sure that, somebody is glad to help. There's a lot of resources.
Well, it sounds like something even I could do. And I'm very heartened to hear that you don't have to be good at math, especially since I couldn't solve the 5+3 captcha.
Well, math will help.
No,
math helps.
That's very encouraging.
Math helps. But I mean, it's not as complex as you would think, unless you want to do, something like calculating vectors and that sort of thing. Then you'll need to know a little bit more. But no, you just for getting a basic app going, the iOS platform is a really wonderful platform because so much has been done for you. There's a lot of reusable code. The modern paradigm of programming language is one of them is called object-oriented programming, OOP. Which means that there's a lot of recyclable code. There's a lot of code that's already been written. Gone are the days when you have to write everything yourself. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. If you want to have the app show a web page, there's code to do that. And they've condensed it down so you can write just a couple lines of code, basically, and you've got a web page. So, it's quite something.
Well, very neat. Thanks for that, and congratulations, Liam, on the release of the game in both the iOS and the Android marketplaces. Very, very exciting stuff. We have one more article and one more announcement coming from Sarahtech, so I'm going to turn it over to Lisa, who will take up both of those, and then I'll be right back with you. So, Lisa, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. We are nearing the end of our time. So, if either of these or any of the stories that we cover, for that matter, interest you, I encourage you to check in the show notes, usually by Monday, thereabouts. The podcast is posted and the show notes are posted as well. if you follow social media at all, you know that on June 11, the current Twitter API will go away. It will stop working. What that means is that if your Twitter client does not and has not updated, it will not work. There has been a great deal of speculation as to what will and will not work. But I wanted to tell you about one thing that will work. Now, let me give a little bit of background. Last month, we talked about the accessible Amazon Kindle app, and we pushed the proverbial envelope with that because that sort of broke overnight from April 30th to May 1st. But it was such a big story that we couldn't pass up the chance to share it with you. And it seems that this happens more often than not. And when we share them, we have to be very clear and say, we know that this is the next month, and we still get email. So we've decided, if there is one, to pick a must-share story that maybe has broken at the beginning of the next month, and we'll share it with you. And so we have sort of unofficially christened it the Serospectives spoiler. And this month's Serospectives spoiler comes directly from Serotech. Now, I feel that I can blow the horn of this particular product because I was not its programmer or developer. I've worked a bit on documentation and training, but mostly I've just used it a lot. And I really love it. It has revolutionized my use of social media. Those of you who've listened to me before know that there is no love lost between me and Facebook in particular. I could navigate it, but, you know, I'd learn my way around the website, and I'd learn to kind of breeze on past all the Farmville posts and Magic Sprinkle game whatever posts, and then they'd change the website completely. So I find that Facebook and a lot of things are much easier with Serotech's new socializer. I'm also one of these people that doesn't use Skype very much. So when I do go to use it, regardless of what program, I find that I've had to teach myself kind of how to use it all over again. Okay, what hotkey is that? What command is that? But with the Serotech socializer, it puts all of your contacts into one window. So you have created accounts, and then you enter that account information into the SAMNet socializer, and you have Skype, and Skype calling and chat, Facebook chat and statuses, Twitter, and then various messaging services, Google, Jabber, AOL, Yahoo, Windows Live, and SAMNet. So you can set up any number of accounts, and all your contacts who are online, whom you can interact with in some way, will show up in one long list. And it's very cool because it knows where your contact is from. So, for example, if you have a Facebook contact, it will give you the option to go directly to that person's wall. But if it's a Skype contact, you won't see that. You may see the option to call them. So if you think that the socializer is something that you might be interested in, I would strongly encourage you to take the opportunity to get a free 7-day trial of System Access Mobile Network by going to www.satogo.com, and that's SATOGO.com. Traditionally, after these podcasts, there is also an informal chat in the tech chat room. To participate, you also need to be a SAMNet member. And so if you have a membership, you're welcome to join us this evening. Just one programming note that is coming up. Next month, we look forward to welcoming international guests to the podcast. Because of that, the time will be different, and the date will probably also be different. So please do check serotalk.com, check SAMNet, check social media. We'll give you plenty of advance notice when that is happening. Thank you so much for staying with us, for listening. And now I would like to turn it back over to Steve to close us out for the evening.
Well, thank you very much, and very excited about the new features of the Socializer. That's going to be lots of fun, and excited to anything that makes Skype and Facebook easier, and my book is a definite win. So very excited to check that out and hope others do as well. As you said, and I'll just reiterate, thanks everyone for joining us, especially those that have joined us live and those who are listening to the podcast. Hopefully we'll be able to see you in the chat in the not too future if you're able to make it. And of course, a big thank you to our guests joining us this evening. Kim, thanks for joining us. Again, congratulations on the release of the game and all of the other info you've provided this evening.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was great to be here.
You, thanks for jumping in at the last moment. Realize it was very last minute and glad you were able to rise to the occasion and be with us this evening. Thanks for all the contributions you've made to the community and that you continue to make through the mailing lists and app development and all of that stuff.
Aww.
Not to mention the podcast. Putting up with me, which is probably the biggest contribution.
Steve, you were the reason I came tonight. You were the reason I
and I thought I was.
It was all of you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Seriously. I really, really appreciate Lisa and Ricky and Mike asking me at the last minute to come. It's my pleasure. And if you guys don't mind, I would love to just a quick plug for Looktel, just to let people know that we have the new installment to VoiceOver tutorial that was out yesterday in the App Store. So go and check that out. And once again, thanks. Thanks, you guys.
That's two Serospective spoilers.
Yeah.
But do check it out.
There you go.
It's a doubleheader.
So, yeah, thanks. Thanks, everybody. I sure
haven't. Well, great. And we look forward to joining all of you next month for next month or this month in tech for next month. Boy, I'm getting tired. But the international edition at whatever its time will be. And I don't know if I'm hosting that or someone else is. I'm not sure. But either way, I will be joining as a participant, if not the host. And hopefully I'll get to be the host, but we'll see what happens. Until then, enjoy
Absolutely.
The month and enjoy all the technology. We'll see you next time.